Well, Steve, thank you very much for that very nice introduction, and it's great to be with all of you. I would say it's great to be anywhere other than Washington, D.C., but it's especially great to be back in Lubbock. Just an editorial note here. You better believe I'm going to be wearing my... better believe I'll be wearing my 100% cotton Red Raider t-shirt tomorrow. None of that synthetic jersey nonsense. So just to clear that up. Well, it's great to be back in Lubbock, and where people are logical, they're sensible, they love their country, they know what works and what doesn't work. And believe me, it's a relief to be here. And it's an honor to receive this U.S. Senate Seed Cotton Champion Award. We may be known for black gold in Texas, but we all know cotton is king. Supporting the longevity of seed cotton isn't just important to you and your business, it's important to our state's economy. People who were raised on concrete may be surprised to learn that according to the 212 census, agriculture employs one out of every seven working Texans. And with more than 28 million people in our state, that's a huge number of people who live off the land. The economic impact, as you know, of the Texas ag sector totals about $100 billion a year. We lead the nation in the number of farms and ranches, with nearly 250,000 of them covering 130 million acres. Considering the fact that we rank first in the nation in the number of cattle and calves, and are the top producer of hay and horses and, of course, cotton, we know the land is hard at work. But those numbers don't mean ag life is a walk in the park by any means. President Dwight Eisenhower, who I think, although he was born in Texas, called Kansas home, said, "Farming looks mighty easy when your plow is a pencil and you're 1,000 miles away from a cornfield. But for those of you who work real plows and tend real fields, you know the truth is much different." And because of this group's constant advocacy, I know the truth is different. I meet with Texas farmers, both here and in Washington, D.C., to talk about what your struggles are and what we can do, what I can do, to try to help relieve some of those burdens. But believe me, as Steve indicated, I rely on your input and advocacy. I know it takes time and money to come to Washington, D.C. and explain to your elected representatives exactly what's going on and what you need from us. But I believe we've done a lot of good together in the last couple of years. And Steve touched on it, but let me talk a little bit more about it. First, the bad news. In 2014, we know a farm bill was signed that failed to address a lot of the challenges that you face here in the state. One of the most egregious problems with that bill that was signed by President Obama was that it excluded cotton from the Title I safety net. This, of course, was a product of the 2002 trade dispute initiated by Brazil. But cotton was unfairly singled out while other row crops were included. I learned from you the potential consequences this would have, and I worked as hard as I could with you to try to change that provision. But as Steve said, we came up short at first. But there's one thing I've learned about working in Washington, D.C., that if first you don't succeed, try again, and perseverance pays off. If only because you wear down the opposition. But usually if you have a better idea, it will prevail eventually. But even then, our efforts came up short. While the Senate passed the bill, and because it excluded this provision in part and others, I voted against it. So I ask each of you to share with me and those of us who represent you in Washington, D.C., to tell us what you think, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Well, on that one, I heard you loud and clear. The cotton must be included in the Title I safety net. And as you know, Congress is not known for speed. Just the opposite is true. I knew that cementing a long-term fix might take some time, so we started looking for a short-term fix to help until that happened. Along with our friends in the House, Chairman Conaway, Congressman Thornberry, Congressman Arrington, and others, we began working on that cotton ginning cost share program to provide short-term assistance. The cost share program provided a combined $57 million to our region in the 2015 and 2016 crop years and brought a little bit of relief to folks who were hurting after that 2014 bill. But it wasn't meant to act as anything more than a transition or a Band-Aid until we could finally get cotton included in the farm safety net again. And fortunately, we didn't have to wait too much longer. When President Trump signed the Balanced Bipartisan Budget Act last February, we were able to right the wrong done in 2014 and reinstated cotton under the Title I. It was a major victory for the Plains cotton growers and for all of us, and I want to thank you for your advocacy and your encouragement and all the work you did, even outside of my office and my staff, to make that happen. But as you know, legislation is by design not made easy. We have different branches of government. We have different houses of the legislature. Ordinarily, legislation is a killing field. It's designed to kill legislation. It's not designed to pass it. So only by working hard over a long period of time and building consensus, educating policymakers, were we able to get this done. The Senate Appropriations Committee initially placed a cottonseed and dairy industry assistance program into the fiscal year 2018 Ag Appropriation Bill, but due to some other roadblocks, this legislation was not enacted in the fall of 2017 as we had liked. So as you heard, it took us until 2018 when we finally found an opportunity to rework the seed cotton proposal, and this time we were successful. And I have to tell you, as Steve alluded, I got a call from Mike Conaway, and he said, we're going to get this done in the House, but we need you to get this done in the Senate. And I gave him my commitment, and thankfully, the president ultimately signed his name on the bill, and we all breathed a sigh of relief. After years of depressed prices, this will help cotton growers once again compete on a level playing field. And I hope you'll begin to feel some of the positive impacts of this change and that we'll never have to go to the mat again to keep cotton on the list. While that was a major accomplishment, it wasn't the only big win for Texas agriculture. The 2018 Farm Bill, which passed the end of last year with my support, included a number of provisions that provide more certainty to our farmers across the country and included, once again, that cotton Title I provision. But we know that one of your biggest challenges is not the federal government, it's Mother Nature. She doesn't have much of an interest in listening to what you or Congress has to say. But some things Congress does have the power to influence, and we did it in the 2018 Farm Bill by strengthening the price loss coverage program to help Texas producers with some stability through unpredictable weather, natural disasters, and trade retaliation. With so many parts of the High Plains and other agriculture areas throughout the state facing a historical drop in farm income, I hope this provides some comfort and some consolation to you. But as we all know, the world is a complicated place, and there are intended and unintended consequences. And one of the areas where I know you've had to suffer some unintended consequences is in the retaliation against agriculture as a result of some of our trade conflicts. As important as our efforts were legislatively, we aren't just focused on protecting our farms and our farmers from unpredictable conditions. We want to provide you with the best and most competitive environment to sell and export your product. Right now, we're having a lot of conversations about NAFTA, or as we soon will come to know it as the USMCA, the US-Mexico-Canada Agreement. Soon after I heard that the administration was considering changes in NAFTA, I began working closely with the U.S. Trade Representative, Ambassador Lighthizer, as others in the administration to keep up the pressure to fix it, not nix it. I still remember that Ambassador Lighthizer and Wilbur Ross, when they testified in front of the Senate Finance Committee, they said that they essentially took a Hippocratic oath. You remember, this is what doctors do when they say, first do no harm. And they said their approach to trade was to first do no harm. Well, I wasn't so sure they were going to keep that commitment along the way. But here we are with an agreement between Canada and Mexico and the United States. NAFTA has unquestionably been a plus for our state, as well as agriculture and your industry in particular. Mexico is the fifth largest foreign destination for U.S. raw cotton, annually purchasing almost 1 million bales. That's nearly 10% of our cotton exports. Mexico also ranks second among U.S. cotton textile and apparel export customers, accounting for 15% of total U.S. exports. Canada accounts for another 6%. In turn, the U.S. market accounts for $3 billion annually in cotton textile imports from Mexico and Canada. But so many recent economic advancements in our digitized market necessitated another look at NAFTA, which at this point was a dinosaur. The heads of all three countries, as I said, have now signed an agreement, and we're waiting now on the administration to send the final language of that bill over to the Congress so we can begin to move it. Overall, the new agreement will preserve the current market access benefits of NAFTA for American cotton, such as duty-free trade in raw cotton and cotton textile products, and encourages continued regional integration of the cotton and textile supply chain. This was part of the do-no-harm approach to safeguard markets for U.S. farms. As we prepare to do our final review in Congress, hopefully in the next couple of months, I want you to know that I'm committed to making sure that any trade agreement continues to provide more opportunities and a greater competitive advantage for Texas farmers. Of course, Mexico and Canada aren't our only trade partners. The big 800-pound gorilla in the room is always going to be China, and we're all focused on the negotiations that are occurring between the United States and China, which hopefully will result in an agreement sometime in the near future. When China imposed its 25% retaliatory tariff on U.S. cotton, it hurt. This was unfair and undeserved, but you all, sadly, were the collateral damage of those trade conflicts. As I said, hopefully this will be resolved soon and the tariffs will go away. The U.S. Cotton Council tells me that a baseline or minimum goal for U.S. cotton would be a market share of 45% of China's cotton imports. That would simply return us to the market share of the two most recent crop years before the tariff was imposed, and hopefully bring back some sense of normalcy and predictability. I'd also like to make sure that we keep effective enforcement and monitoring provisions in place to prevent China from imposing additional non-tariff barriers that could cause even more damage. That's one of the biggest problems with China. Even though they got into the World Trade Organization, they don't necessarily follow the rules like everybody else, and the enforcement provisions and monitoring provisions are very important. So let me just say in closing, I'm very proud of what we have accomplished together the last couple of years to support cotton, and I'm hopeful we can keep that progress going. Once again, thank you for the opportunity to come before you today and share some updates on what we're working on in Washington. I'm honored to receive the Plains Cotton Growers U.S. Seed Cotton Champion Award, and I assure you that my support for your industry will not waver. In order to continue to effectively represent you and your needs, I need your continued feedback. So don't be afraid to reach out early and often to let me know what we can do to help. And if you ever think we're on the wrong course, I like to think our relationship is good enough that you can tell me and we can have that conversation. And believe me, don't be afraid to throw down a few tortillas like that great tech tradition if you know we've made a bad call. with that, I'm happy to answer or dodge a couple of questions if we have time that Mary Jane tells me that we have left. So thanks again. Appreciate it.
Senator, thank you for being here. We really appreciate you coming.
Thanks, Sean.
Wondering what you thought about the time frame of when we might see an action finality to the USMCA.
Well, as you know, there are a number of shot clocks and within the Trade Promotion Authority bill that we passed. And just to refresh your memory, Trade Promotion Authority essentially was authorization by Congress to delegate to the executive branch the ability to negotiate this deal subject to an up or down vote in the Senate. So the scary part of that is that we can't change it. Once it's comes to us, it's an up or down vote. And just to give you a little bit of context here, one of the things that continues to concern me about this agreement and how Congress deals with it is even under Trade Promotion Authority, which we passed under President Obama, only 13 Democrats voted for it, 47 Republicans voted for it. And I have to say, since that time, trade's gotten to be a little more controversial, primarily because I don't think people understand the economics of it. But I saw where Nancy Pelosi, of the House, said where the House will start the bill, said she was looking for the Mexican legislature to make some changes on the labor issue before she would be willing to take it up in the House. Henry Cuellar from Laredo, Texas, who's maybe one of the last blue dog Democrats in the House, tells me that he thinks he's got as many as 100 House members to vote for the USMCA. I'm sure if Ms. Pelosi gives them the green light and we can get that done, then they can get it over to the Senate, and then we'll cobble together our 51 votes. I think it's going to be a little choppy, but I think we all understand what's at stake and that failure is not an option. So I would expect maybe no earlier than the end of this month we'll see that language from the White House, and hopefully Ambassador Lighthizer and the White House will take our advice to heart, but let's get these issues settled before you send it over to us, because obviously we can't change it once it comes to us. So my hope is we get this done certainly starting in the spring and hopefully by summertime.
Any other questions? We have about 10 minutes left, so plenty of time if anybody has a question for the Senator.
Senator, thank you for being a champion for Texas. See Congress taking some action to provide some relief in the form of, you know, we had the MFP program that came through USDA, but do you see any action from Congress to provide some liquidity to the country in the form of legislative action?
Well, you asked me a direct question. I'll give you a direct answer. I'm not optimistic. Given the polarized political environment in Washington, D.C. these days, and given the fact that now the House and the Senate are divided politically, it's going to take, I would be surprised to see something come out of the House that we would then take up and pass in the Senate. I would love to be surprised by that, but to me, that's one of the things that I worry the most about right now, about the way Congress is operating, because in the age of a President Trump, Ms. Pelosi and the House seem to think anything that they do that he can claim credit for is a win for him and a loss for them. I mean, as long as politics is a zero-sum game where you win and I lose or vice versa, it's hard to come up with a common ground to resolve some of these issues. So I'm not optimistic we'll be able to get much done in terms of legislation. The one thing I know we will be able to do is to continue to confirm federal judges, and that's going to be perhaps the single most lasting legacy of the Trump administration, because we've got about seven or eight federal judges in Texas alone in the pipeline that should be confirmed over the next couple of months. But other legislation is going to be tough. Well, thank you all very much for having me.